Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, when you think of the sport, you really don't think of true humility and aspects of life that are going to continue after you're away from the cage. Our guest today has a truly unique story, and I think it's best told by him. But when it was first brought to my attention, I kind of looked into the story, and it captured my heart because he's a true warrior in every essence of the way. But also, he looked at life in a totally different aspect. With that being said, I want to welcome the one and only Aaron Lofton to the program. Aaron, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well, Don. Thank you for having me, sir.
Oh, it's truly an honor. You know, when we think of a sport, there's very few that have the magnitude or the thought process that you do. But we'll get to that in a second here. You know, when I first talked to you about the show, I told you we kind of do a unique 360 aspect. You know, and I'm going to ask a stereotypical Wikipedia question to begin with because it'd give me a lot to feed off of. But what actually was life like for Aaron Lofton, and what led you down the path to the sport that we all love?
Well, man, I tell you, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I think I was there until I was about 21 to 22, went to Dallas for a while, and then ended up back in Tulsa, and went to high school, played football, played basketball. I still play basketball. It's really my first love when it comes to sports. Then went on to college, played Division II football, played football at a junior college there in Miami, Oklahoma, NEO. And after school, I still had that competitive edge of wanting to get out there and see what I was made of. So, you know, I run into a guy at a gym one day. I see cauliflower ears. I see tap-out tattoos. And I was thinking, man, this guy looks super tough and unique. It's, I started picking his brain, and he invited me down to train at his gym, and went in there and got my butt kicked by guys about half my size, and you know, I was in love with it, man. I walked out of there with a bloody nose, threw up a couple times, had my pride hurt a little bit, but I said, man, I want more of this. So that's kind of how it all came to fruition for me. It was a love
that's
to compete.
Cool. Yeah, you know, you eventually get your amateur start in King of the Cage. What was it like back in those days to actually get a start in King of the Cage, which King of the Cage is still around today? What did it mean for you, Aaron, to get that call to partake in King of the Cage, and how did you look at your career from that moment forward?
Well, I tell you, Don, I was actually doing marketing for a medical company there in Tulsa at the time, and had what I considered a pretty sweet gig at the time. I'd walk around and go see executives and try to sell upper respiratory equipment. And then, you know, I'd been training for about a year, year and a half with a gentleman named Pete Wilhelm out of Triton there in Tulsa. He's still got a gym there. And he calls me one day and says, hey, man, you know, you've been training with us for about a year, year and a half. You've made a lot of progress. We think that you've got some talent. Why don't you come out? King of the Cage is looking for a heavyweight amateur. We've got some other guys on the fight team that are going to be competing. And it'll be great, man. It's at the Kiowa Casino, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's an outdoor venue, but King of the Cage is a nationally known organization, and, you know, it'll be cool experience. So I chewed on it for about 24 hours, and I said, you know what the heck, life's all about experiences. So I made sure that I had some buddies that were going to be there with video cameras, because this was probably going to be the only time that I ever competed, and I wanted to get it on camera, win, lose, or draw. Just to have the street cred of walking in and saying, yeah, I'm an MMA fighter, right? So I'm in the cage, you know, back up just a bit there. The day before weigh-ins, we are sitting there at the casino. I'm super nervous, can't sleep, can't eat. I've got about 30 to 35 guys with me that are either friends or training partners or other fighters. And I'm just on nerve's end, right? So I'm considering even pulling out at this point. You get to the weigh-ins, and, you know, I'm sitting there talking in line, trying to be cool, calm, and collected. And a guy in front of me says, hey, man, so it's your first fight? Who are you fighting? I said, man, yeah, it's first fight, amateur fight. I'm fighting a guy named Benji Norris. He goes, oh, dude, Benji is a tank. Dude, my brother fought that guy, hit him over the head. You could hit him with a baseball bat, and the guy's just not fazed. So, you know, at this point, I'm nervous as all get out. And then I find out that the guy that I'm fighting is supposedly a monster, right?
Yeah.
He's not there for weigh-ins. He shows up an hour late. He weighs in at 287 pounds. I was weighing about 240 at the time. And they said, hey, Aaron, your opponent's got you by 45, 50 pounds. Are you sure you want to go ahead and fight? As an amateur, they'll give you some flexibility. I said, yeah, I'm here. I made the drive, and I'm going to fight. So next day, I'm the first or second fight out. They call my name. They mispronounce my name. They played the wrong entry song. They also said it was a wrong fight school. And I was thinking, man, what is this? Is this real life? What the heck's going on here? Finally get out there, bell rings, and Benji Norris jumps out again, about 5'10", 5'11", 287 pounds, and starts doing capoeira. Just like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into here? So he's dancing around back and forth, kind of doing this crazy setup. He throws a kick, and it was almost like I was in the Matrix because I had the perfect combination of nerves, athleticism, and kind of preparedness that went into this fight. And, man, it was just like every time he moved, I was two steps ahead of him, got out of the way of his kick, hit him with a flurry of punches. He shot a double, and my signature move is a guillotine choke. I caught him perfectly on a guillotine choke, felt both carotid arteries cut off, and I completely choked him out in about 22 seconds. And I was the man at the Kiowa Casino that day, my friend. So it was pretty awesome.
Most definitely. You walk out and you step to the octagon, and this guy comes out pulling blood sport on you.
Exactly. I was thinking, man, I'm either in for a rough day, or this guy has no idea what he's doing. Either way, I'm just going to react and do what I need to do. And regardless, like I said, win, lose, or draw, I was going to walk out of there with my free T-shirt and the reputation as an MMA fighter. So I was good either way, right?
Yeah, right. It was one of the movie moments, you know, that you got to look back and reflect upon. You know, it's kind of funny because there's a certain aspect, you know, you're known as a larger-than-life character with your crazy hair, the painted toenails and things. But truth be the apparition that you were actually your mother's guinea pig from her salon, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my mother was a beautician early on, and she would they always got new products, and whether it was eyebrow wax or nail polish or putting on, I don't know what it's called, where they actually build up the nails, but we got to try all of those, myself and my father. She would come home and be really excited about a new product and just kind of start tearing open wrappers and trying them out on us, so... not to mention, you know, anytime I got off school, I'd go hang out. She worked at a couple different beauty salons. I'd go up there and, you know, get a haircut, get my eyebrows waxed, get a facial, get a pedicure. And I was like, man, this is not bad. So I didn't realize that it wasn't the masculine thing to do and just kept right on going. And I tell you, I'm still to the point where I go get a pedicure a week. I go get hydrofacials. I get my eyebrows waxed and, you know, so it came to full circle here. You know, here I am, 39 years old, still hitting up the beauty salon. So,
hey, brother, you're not the only one lit in the swarm of a cell. I love to give him a bad time on the show from time to time because his sister owns a beauty salon over there in the UK, and, you know, it's kind of our signature trademark on the show to give him crap. We say, you're going to get a mani and a pedi before you fight. He goes,
yeah, absolutely,
I'm gonna get my
man.
Eyebrows tweezed too, brother. I just died.
Absolutely.
You know
that there's a saying out there, if you look good, you feel good. If you feel good, you perform well. And I was a firm believer in that. So I always wanted to be bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and well-manicured before any fight. You know, they'd say, you know, you got 24 hours before you leave out on the plane. What are you going to do? What's your last-minute preparation? So, man, I want to make sure I'm watching calories, making sure I'm watching the amount of water intake that I'm taking. You know, I'd always cut a significant amount of weight, especially if I was fighting at 205. But I said, you know, the day before I get on that plane, my last stop of the day is going to be the spray tan. I got to get my spray tan on, man. So I caught a lot of flack for that.
You know, it's cool because you look back at them times and you were unique in your way, and it kind of paved the way to, you know, for you to get the attention and of the people that you truly needed. But when did you decide, Aaron, or when did you feel or realize that you had this tremendously aggressive style? Because the style that you ascertain is one of dominance. I mean, you look at some of your past fights, you look at the way you held yourself in the cage, you're uniquely different because the aggressiveness is, my God, my friend, it's incredible. When did you decide or realize that you had that aggression and that without a tremendous amount of ability?
You know, it really didn't come to fruition for me, even after I had my first professional fight. You know, I said I was just going to do that one amateur fight. And then, you know, a week later, I have a guy that comes up to me at Gold's Gym. He's like, hey, buddy, you know, I saw your fight out there at the Kiowa Casino. I'm a local promoter. We're putting on a fight at the Tulsa Convention Center. We'd love to have you on as your first pro fight. Let me know what you think. And I said, yeah, you know, why not? I'll do one pro fight. Hopefully I'll get another free T-shirt out of this thing and we'll catch it on camera, right? So they line up. I say, hey, man, we've got this world champion Muay Thai fighter named John Wolf. You know, at the time, I didn't know enough about the sport to really look this guy up and do my due diligence. And I was, again, nervous as all get out to fight this guy. But I said, you know what, I'm going to do it, and I'm gonna catch it on film, and that's it. So I go out there, knock this guy out with a TKO in 44 seconds. And for me, it was just reacting. You know, I think I beat some guys that had more skill than I did, but I was just more aggressive. I wanted to get in, get out. I had a really strong overhand right, and I was very quick to react, to catch people in a submission. So, you know, beat him. And then really when it all kind of hit me was after the fight with Jason Kuchera. My very first fight, you know, I'd gotten a phone call. Actually, my coach, Pete Wilhelm at the time, got a phone call for another fighter that was no longer with us. And they were trying to bring him up and wanted to fight one of their hometown heroes there in Edmonton, Alberta, for the MFC, Maximum Fighting Championship. So they said, yeah, you know, this fighter's no longer with us, but we got a guy that's won one amateur and won one pro fight. And, you know, he could come up and fight at 205. Well, at the time, I was about 240 pounds. I'd never cut weight in my life. But they told me I had the opportunity to fight on TV in 2 months, but I had to cut 35 pounds. I was like, man, I am in. Let's do this. So I successfully cut the weight, and I went up there and fought this guy, Jason Kuchera. I think he was 5-1 at the time. Like I said, big-time hometown hero. And went out there, and we had the bloodiest fight of the year on HD Net that year. We beat the tar out of each other. I'm talking stitches, blood, broken nose, everything in between. And, you know, going back and watching that fight, I was like, man, this is really something. It raised a lot of eyebrows for people that were watching me, whether they were thinking that I would succeed or fail in the sport of MMA. At that point, it kind of solidified me in my own mind that hey, man, I can do this. I've got a gift. So after that fight, about 48 hours goes by, and the promoter, Mark Pavlich at the time, called me and said, hey, Aaron, man, we love you. We love your style. We love everything that you brought out to Canada. We want to give you a 4-fight contract. What do you think? I said, absolutely. So I went in, I quit my job, and started training full-time, and that was kind of the start of a pretty successful career. And that's all I did for the next 3.5 to 4 years is just fight, live off fight purses and sponsorships. So, you know, I think the Jason Kuchera fight for me was really an eye-opener, saying, hey, man, I've really got an opportunity to make a splash here for the next few years, and let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah, you know, it's quite tremendous, because to get the attention of Pavlich and then go on to get the bloodiest fight of the year and get the Bazzi Award for it, that's a tremendous honor in its own right. But then you go out and you have a 17-second win against Dwayne Lewis. You know, what was that moment? Walk me through that. What was that fight like for you? Because a lot of people didn't think that you were going to be, you know, successful in this outing, but you proved everybody wrong in 7 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Seconds,
oh, yeah. Right? Man, I tell you, Don, that was a perfect alignment of the stars that evening, and I'll tell you why. We had flying out of Tulsa. We always flew through Denver, and this time, unfortunately, we had like a 5-hour layover in Denver. So I was thinking, okay, I've got to stay on point with my diet, got to make sure that I'm on point with the amount of water that I'm intaking. You know, again, cutting, walking around about 235 and cutting down to 206 was challenging, but it was doable as long as everything stayed on point. So we got a 5-hour layover there in Denver. I was thinking, okay, I'll just have some broccoli and chicken from one of these Asian places, and I'll be fine. Well, that wasn't the case. Apparently, it was loaded with sodium. We get to the casino that evening, right around 10:30. You know, all the fighters weigh in the night before just to see how much weight we're going to have to cut. I jumped on that scale and it said 226 pounds, and I was freaking out. My coach was freaking out. Everybody was freaking out, right? So we went over, checked another scale, and it was like, yeah, you're right at 226. So I immediately started cutting water that night. Woke up the next day, started cutting. We had weigh-ins right around 6 p.m. that following day, and I just couldn't make it. I got down to 208. I was even we made a trip to the hospital to see if I could get some Pedialyte or get – I'm sorry, not Pedialyte, but get an IV to rehydrate. And the hospital's like, listen, you know, we're going to admit you here in about 4 hours, and you may or may not get an IV at that point. Your best bet is just to go home, get some Pedialyte, and, you know, see what happens here. So that being said, next night's fight night, I was so dehydrated and in such tough shape that the arches of my feet were burning, even walking down from backstage down to the cage, which might have been about 80 to 100 yards. I'm walking into the cage, and I just look at my coach, and we were really good friends at that point. You know, had worked together for a while, and a lot of trust there back and forth, and it was really a keep-it-real relationship that I had with Pete. I said, Pete, man, I'm going to go out here and explode, and I'm either going to knock this guy out or I'm going to lose miserably. So just heads up. He's like, no, you're fine. You're in shape. You can do this. You can do. I was like, Pete, I'm telling you, this is a keep-it-real moment. So went out there and kind of timed that left hand. I know that kind of in the back of my head, Mark Pavlich at the time, you know, he's the promoter's promoter, man. He could make you think that you could conquer the world, right? So whenever Dwayne actually signed up for the fight originally, he told me, he's like, hey, I got to tell you, Dwayne, we threw your name out at Dwayne Lewis and his camp, and the first thing that they said is, holy shit, man, we really don't know if we want to fight this guy. So I had that in the back of my brain going, well, this guy's going to be extremely apprehensive, maybe a little trigger shy. So I'm going to go out here and explode on this guy and see how he reacts. And fortunately, hit him, threw a feint left out there to get his attention and just came across with that overhand right. And it hit right on the button and put him out. And, man, that was absolutely beautiful. And what was even cooler about it is, you know, Mark Cuban was the owner of HDNet at the time, and he was actually sitting ringside. So, you know, I was like, yeah, I knew it. I know I was the man. I'm the man. You know, I knew it the whole time. So that was really a perfect story of the stars aligning for me that evening because, you know, I had about another minute of fight in me before my body was just ready to shut down. So pretty awesome.
Yeah, it truly is. Well, you know, see, a lot of people that are fans of the sport, not, you know, partakers of the sport, they don't realize also that, you know, when you do fly and you do different things of that aspect, that it also, you gain weight just from traveling in an airplane from one place to another. You know, I forget what fighter it was. I think it was Juan Spaniard Archuleta, who's now in Bellator. He came from King of the Cage, and he jumped on a plane from, I think it was San Diego or something like that, and he was going to overseas, and when he gets off the plane, he's like 3.5, 4, or 5 pounds heavier, and they couldn't figure out why, because he was actually underweight before he left. But, you know, then they kind of realized that and looked into it, that getting on a plane will add weight to you, and they still haven't figured out why it does, but it truly does. And so a lot of fighters now,
so it might not have been the Chinese food is what you're saying, Don. Is that what you're saying? Because this entire time I've been upset
food,
with that Asian food place in Denver for all these years, and now you're telling me it could be something else.
It's kind of weird. You know, I've been in this sport for 22 years. Just last year alone, I interviewed 621 fighters, and you get to hear a lot of stories, and some of them kind of stick out with you. But, you know, the thing that there was a downside in your career, and it kind of played, I guess you could say it played a little havoc in your thought. You know, when we look at the harsh reality came into play when you weren't chosen for the Ultimate Fighter, you know, over Kimbo Slice and Big Country Roy Nelson, excuse me.
Yeah.
How did that play in the heart of you, Aaron, and how did you regroup and get yourself where you needed to be, brother?
You know, whenever we went out, I believe that tryout was in Seattle. Went out there, had a really good showing. You know, you show up in a room at a hotel. It's a big conference room, and it's a little unnerving. You've got about 200 guys in there, different weight classes, different builds, different looks, and you never really know. If you're in the sport long enough, you kind of realize that you, even though some guys may look tough, they're not actually the toughest guys, and the other guy that's super respectful and clean cut and doesn't look like the ultimate badass might be the best guy at jiu-jitsu or the best kickboxer in the room, right? So you're in a room, and all of a sudden, they just call your name, and they call another name, and two guys stand up. It's almost a gladiator style, and they say, okay, you're going to be grappling for 60 seconds or 90 seconds in front of Dana White, in front of Joe Silva, and a couple other UFC executives there, and by the way, in front of this other 198 guys that are going to be watching you guys. So a little bit of a stressful situation, but you go out there and you perform. I had a really good showing with the grappling portion of it. I submitted my guy a couple of times, which was great. And then went out, did the bags, you know, got a thumbs up on the bag. Went through to the interview process, which not everybody got to go through, so I felt really good about that opportunity. Then I want to say about a week goes by, still no phone call. I think Pete ended up following up on my behalf, and they said, hey, we really like Aaron. You know, we'll take a second look at him maybe down the road in the future. But, you know, we've got some other big heavy hitters here that are going to be good for the show. I think Matt Matreon with the NFL background was one of those guys. Big Country Nelson obviously had a lot of momentum behind it, had a well-known name. And then, obviously, Kimbo Slice. I mean, if you didn't know who Kimbo Slice was and you saw a picture of this guy, you'd say, yeah, I'd love to see that guy fight. I want to see what that guy's made of. And then you do some research on him and see all the backyard brawls, and you want to know how he's going to do in MMA. So, you know, for me, it was you know, a little bit of kick in the pants, but I was okay. I think one of my biggest strengths is being optimistic when the cards were stacked against me, and I just keep pushing through. So, you know, it's given me an opportunity to kind of use that same outlook on life, even as a businessman now, as a father, as a husband. You know, there's stuff that's going to happen that's out of your control, and I've gotten way better at just looking at things and going, hey, man, you know, what could I have done differently about this? Looking back, I don't think much at all. I do know that whenever I got there, I think it was day two or day three after we actually arrived. So I think my Mystic tan might have been a little more on point if I had given, you know, if I had actually showed up in Seattle and got a spray tan. But outside of that, I don't think there's anything I could have done differently.
Oh, that's funny. You know, yeah. I realized something when we were on the show. I've actually shot you before. I shot your fight with Brian Imes back in, I think it was 2009. You know,
yeah.
So it's kind of crazy how, you know, things end up this way. So thank you, Scott Zur. This is a tremendous opportunity you gave me.
Absolutely.
To even look back in my life. You know, when you look back in the days of the sport and all that you created, you were a tremendous warrior. You fought some of the best of the best. You know, and I never look at the sport as a win or a loss. I really think records are something that needs to be thrown out, you know, as far as I'm concerned. True warriors of the sport really just deserve the recognition for stepping up in the cage, because most people won't. You know, but I kind of want to take a step back to a lesson that you did get taught, but it was against one of the greatest fighters that ever competed in the UFC, and that being Keith Jardine. What was that moment like for you, Aaron, stepping into the octagon with such a legend as Keith Jardine?
Yeah, so I think it was late 2010, I was no longer fighting full time, and I was working for my father-in-law, kind of doing grunt work, blue collar work, carrying heavy cables from cell phone site to cell phone site, and my focus had really shifted from fighting to, you know, what am I going to do now, right? At the time, I was with my girlfriend. She was pregnant, and you know, responsibility, it's slowly started to shift from being about me to being about us. So, you know, I'm sitting there one day, and, you know, so many of these phone calls came across. I think I had an opportunity to fight Rico Rodriguez and Jeremy Horn and some other big names, and it just, the timing wasn't right. Well, for this one, we actually had about a 2 or 3 month break from work, that we already knew about. And I got the call from, again, my coach, Pete Wilhelm there. He says, hey, he's got an opportunity here. Don't know if you want to jump on it or not. And, you know, within the next 48 hours. But Keith Jardine is looking for somebody to come up to his backyard in Albuquerque and put on a fight. And pretty big boxing promotion, Fresquez Productions. I've done a lot of stuff in boxing, and I think this was only their first or second MMA show. So I immediately pooped my pants and gathered my nerves and went in and talked to my girlfriend and said, hey, what do you think? She goes, well, you know, you've got time to prepare. You've got time to put this together. Is it something you really want to do? I said, man, absolutely. How often do you get an opportunity like this to go out there in one of these kind of Rocky Balboa stories to go face a super tough guy, somebody that I personally idolized for many, many years, even sitting around watching him with my father. You know, my father and I watched a ton of fights together, and we said, man, I really like this guy, Keith Jardine. His fighting style, he's very aggressive, the tough look, the cauliflowered ears, just we liked everything about the package. So I accepted the fight, did everything I needed to do, got down in weight, felt great. And man, I'll tell you, I showed up in Albuquerque, and I know that I should have gotten there maybe a week early to get acclimated to the altitude. The altitude was very, very tough for me to deal with. Not to say that we would have had a different outcome, but I feel like it would have been a more competitive fight. I came out, felt great, nerves weren't there, had corner man with me, Pete showed up, you know, I got the family there, actually I have a bunch of family in Albuquerque, and they came out to the fight, and we mixed it up a bit, and I ended up taking Jardine down once or twice against the cage. He gets back up, catch him with a big left hook, and I had dropped so many people, whether it was training or MMA, that I've never had anybody get up after being dropped to their knees or their back and continue to fight. Well, you know, Keith Jardine, you know, being the veteran that he is and like a Timex, taking a licking and keep on ticking, got back up and proceeded to put it on me, caught me with a big left kick to the ribs and went down from there. And he kind of finished the fight with a TKO. But, you know, I really enjoyed that fight. He was super nice, super respectful the entire time, the entire organization there was really, really great. Had the opportunity to meet an up-and-coming Holly Holmes. She was on the co-main event right before myself and Keith. So it was a great experience, man. It's something that I'd do again in a heartbeat 5 years ago. But it's something that, you know, I really enjoy doing it. And, you know, it's something, again, I've got the photos and the T-shirt. And I believe that I had my nose put a little bit on the side of my face that fight. So, you know, I've got something to remember him by with a deviated septum. So, I mean, it was cool. Really cool experience all the way around.
It had to be because, you know, this sport has left a remarkable thought in my heart. And my head has, you know, I haven't even been a fighter in this sport. I've just been a photographer. But, you know, there was a unique aspect of you that is why you're on the show today and why I'm privileged to interview you. And that you had the unique aspect that I've never seen in very many fighters except for a few. You had this thought process about you that made you realize that there was more to life after the sport, that you realized that you had to create a foundation because the sport wasn't going to be there forever. What was that aspect in Aaron Lofton that allowed you to see into the future and make you realize that, you know, you weren't going to be able to be in the cage forever, and allowed you to create this tremendous road to success that you're on now?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was fighting, when I first started fighting in 2007, that's all I did for the next three, four, 5 years is just fight. And again, live off fight purses and sponsorships. I could not have lived off of fight purses alone. So thank God for the sponsorships that stuck with me from day one. Some of those were local sponsors, some of them were larger sponsors, and they would just give me money every single month. And, you know, if I had a local fight, they'd be front row and I'd get them in the cage. So the only person I had to worry about early on was myself. I didn't have any other responsibilities other than just concerned, worried about Aaron Lofton, what was going to happen to me and how I was going to get by. So, you know, I hit a couple of losses there. I fought a Roger Hollett, lost to Josh Watson. The Keith Jardine fight, and my last fight there was against Matt Thompson, late 2012. And I knew that fighting was pretty much done for me. Early on, even before I started fighting, I would look at somebody and try to connect with somebody and say, man, I want to be like this guy. I want some of what this guy has. Or early on, it was looking at Pete Wilhelm as a ex-military guy, super respectful, really, really tough guy, the MMA guy, and I wanted to be a professional tough guy. I didn't know if I had the grit and the moxie to get it done, and I did prove myself right that I did have that ability. Well, same thing comes along late 2012, 2013. Fighting has wound down considerably. Still training occasionally, helping out with some other fighters, but I knew that I needed to make a change. So, I was working for my father-in-law, doing some pretty tough blue-collar grunt work, and I was fine with that. I was happy. At the time, I was living with my girlfriend in a 400-square-foot hotel room. She's pregnant. We got a 60-pound boxer, and this is the type of hotel that, doors are getting kicked in, DEA showing up, prostitutes in and out. It was a really, really rough area. But we were just happy to be together. And we also, we'd sneak into a dollar movie here or there, or sneak in some concessions. And we were happy. We knew that we were together, and we were okay with that. We knew that the future had something for us. We just didn't know what. So I had a workout partner, a guy named Jimmy, and he worked for a national flooring company for commercial properties. At the time, Jimmy was good-looking, muscular guy, very professional. You think construction, you're thinking, okay, this guy's driving a pickup truck or running around with paint on his pants or whatnot. Well, that wasn't the case with Jimmy. He was dressing business casual, drove a BMW, did really, really well, super successful in what he did. He made his own schedule, and I was thinking, man, I want some of what this guy's got. I want to be this type of business casual, business professional executive for construction, and regardless of what it takes, I think that I can make this happen. I didn't see anything that Jimmy had that I didn't have, other than the connections, the training, and some of the expertise that went into construction. And he comes to me one day when I get this break, and he says, hey, Aaron, why don't you go out, get yourself a couple of painters, I'll take you to a few of my accounts, which were mostly apartment complexes, and we'll see if we can't get you some work, and you can start a little painting company on the side while you're taking a break from working for your father-in-law. I said, yeah, absolutely. So the first account we go into, they said, yeah, we like your prices, you've got your insurance, and keep in mind, at the time, living in a hotel, I've got $1,500 to my name. I spent about $1,000 of that getting insurance and putting together a price sheet and a professional looking presentation to walk into an account and be taken seriously, right? So it was a big, big, big jump for me. So I go out there and they said, yeah, we've got 15 apartments for you. When can you start painting? I said, man, I can start pretty much here in the next few days. What they didn't know is that I didn't have a single painter that worked for me. I didn't know anything about painting. I didn't even know if my prices were right. I just knew kind of what the industry standard was based off of what Jimmy had told me. But I said, you know what? I'll tell you this. I'll go figure it out. So I'm standing around, I'm going to Home Depot's, I'm going to Lowe's, I'm going to Sherwin-Williams and looking for anybody that's got paint on their clothes and saying, hey, you want a job? I've got work right now. Like, literally, I will drive you over there if you can start working. So I picked up a couple painters, and that kind of grew into, hey, you're doing a good job with painting. Do you do resurfacing? Do you do carpentry? Do you do millwork? Can you help us out with the exterior? Do you do roofing? Absolutely, I can do all this. Walk out to my car and Google, what the heck is resurfacing? What is millwork? And just figure it out as we go. And you start to build the pipeline of employees and subcontractors and constantly playing the balancing game of what money's coming in and what money's going out. Well, fortunately, my father-in-law, very successful businessman himself, gave me some direction, helped me out financially early on. And it just grew and grew and grew. So, I remember coming back home one night when my girlfriend and I had just moved into our very first apartment, about a 900-square-foot apartment there in Austin. And I said, honey, you're not going to believe what happened today. She says, well, what's that? I said, well, I just signed a contract for $3,400, and we're going to make about $2,000 on this because I've got the guys that are going to do it for $1,400. And she just kind of looked at me and said, well, you know, that's really good. And, man, I tell you, I came home with my chest stuck out, and I was thinking, I am the man. I just need, like, 20 more of these, and life is set, right? We're moving to Mexico. We're retiring. Shows what little I know, right, or knew at the time. So, you know, that first year, I think we ended up doing right around $60,000 or $70,000. You know, it grew year in, year out. 4 or 5 years down the road, I think we hit $1 million, which is just surpassed anything I could have imagined us doing. I brought on a business partner that came in with an investment, bought out 15% of the company, and he says, hey, Aaron, you know, what's going to happen here in the next few years when you hit $10 million? I mean, what are you going to do? I said, dude, you're crazy. There's no way we're going to hit the $10 million mark, right?
Right.
Well, 4 years later, which would have been 2 years ago, we actually exceeded $12 million, which was just mind-blowing to me. And this year alone, we've already exceeded that in just the first quarter of business. So I think it's a perfect combination of relationships, identifying what I wanted to do, and having the pieces of the puzzle to make that happen. The same mindset that I took in fighting. I tell you, if I fought in Canada, if I fought in Inola, Oklahoma, anywhere that I fought, I made sure to stop and talk to everybody that wanted to take the time to talk to me. They wanted to take a picture. They wanted to have a brief conversation. If they wanted to talk about a problem, I made sure to be super respectful of their time because they wanted to take some of my time. And I thought that was pretty awesome at the time, right? Also, I know that people each and every day are going through something different. They're going through a different hardship that I may have gone through or I may not have gone through. But I know what a difference can make of just stopping and talking to somebody, helping out, whether that's financially, whether that's advice, or whether that's just giving time and being a part of that equation. So I took that same mindset into business. And whenever I would show up at a property, if it was a maintenance man getting paid $9 an hour to pick up cigarette butts, I'd go out there and talk to him. You know, I'd buy everybody burgers or tacos and make sure that people know that you're a legit dude, that you care about people, that you're not just there for the dollar, that you're really a decent human being. And when people see that, they want to give you opportunities. They want to learn more about you and see what you can do. And that opens up a lot of doors for me. It opened up a lot of doors for me in MMA. I wouldn't say that I was ever an A-level, top-notch guy out there, but I was a pretty good B-level fighter that was very marketable because I enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed talking to people. I knew that the image that came along with that was just as important as going out and being able to perform in the ring. So that's why a lot of promoters enjoyed having me on their cards. And, you know, each and every one of those, I'd go out and make sure to represent not only my name, but their name as well, whether it was an interview or getting together and talking to fans one-on-one. And that's kind of the same approach that I take in business, is just making sure that everybody feels valued and just keep it moving, right? So I think that's the correlation between the two for me that's really paid off to this day.
Yeah, you know, I got to agree with you there, but then you know, I've seen a statement that just profounded me, but I honestly don't think it's – I mean, I think it's a true statement, but I don't think it tells the whole story. You know, there's a statement out there that you had made that fighting helped you become the man you are today. But when I – after interviewing you, I truly believe it's your heart. It's your compassion. It's the aspect that your family has instilled in you that truly has allowed you to become the man today. And, you know, sitting through the interview, I'm listening to you talk about being in this hotel room and, you know, the scenario that it was. You know, I think between your values that you were taught and instilled as a young man and then looking at your girlfriend and realizing that there needed to be a better life, you know, for you and her and whoever you brought into this world, truly has designated and designed you who you are today. You know, and when you sit back and you look at it, it's a tremendous correlation. And, you know, I've got a lot of respect for you. So at the end of the day, when you do get a chance to sit back and get a reflection into Aaron Lofton, who do you truly see, not just as a warrior, but as a man?
You know, it took me many, many years to figure out that I absolutely had a rock star set of parents early on. growing up, man, I tell you, I got in a ton of trouble, so much trouble that I've seen parents walk away from situations for much less. At one point in life, I was facing 25 years in prison, and my parents were rock solid. So I attribute a lot of who I am today and the compassion that I have and the mindset that I have to growing up with parents that were 100% unconditionally devoted to me as a son, and that wanted to see me succeed. So myself as a father now, you know, early on before I had my own child, I'd have buddies that come up to me, and this is when I was still single and just kind of floating around like a feather and still partying and all this good stuff, right? They'd come up and show me pictures of their kiddos, and I'd say, yeah, you got a kiddo. You know, they kind of smell like dairy products, and they're loud and messy, right? I want no part of that. But then, for me, you know, the first time I see, you know, this tiny little bundle with blue eyes looking up at me and gurgling, and it just captured me, and it took me back and really made me reappreciate everything that I had been through as a son. And I like to think that I give that compassion, that love, the feeling that I remember coming from my parents to my family now, and the ability for me, whenever I can step away from everything, and whether it's doing something as simple as going to the park and just hanging out with my wife and my kiddo, it just really gives me an opportunity to step back and go, man, look what I've done. You know, I've lost both my parents. I lost them within 2 years of each other, right? And that was really, really tough for me to deal with. But it took even years after losing them to really realize how fortunate I was early on. And it really gives me the respect and the mindset now of, man, look what I've done. It's just truly amazing. It's still surreal at times. I got to wake up and kind of pinch myself. My wife and I, we love to travel. We'll take our munchkin with us, you know, whether we go to Mexico or Atlantis or even down to the pond, we just kind of sit around and really enjoy ourselves. And that's something I promised myself, is no matter how busy I get, no matter what's going on, the sky's falling, you know, we're losing money over here, we've got a problem over in Dallas with one of our projects, is to stop and just say, man, you know, it's still all good. I've got a beautiful, hot, smoking wife that was with me when I was flat broke. I've got a 7-year-old daughter that's healthy and beautiful and smart and funny, and I've had these opportunities, and by God's grace, I'm where I'm at today and still rolling with some amazing opportunities. And I just think it's kind of put into perspective for me just to kind of stay humble and enjoy who I've become over the years. And I attribute a lot of that to my folks and to the family that I've been given now. It's a tremendous opportunity for me to give back. So,
yes, it's a true blessing, really. I mean, in all aspects, brother. I mean, I'm humbled by your interview because, you know, I get some of these new era fighters on here, and a lot of them truly don't understand the aspect of life or family or what it is just to feel complete or free, and I think you understood that at an early age, and like you said, it's because of your tremendous, you know, upbringing with your parents. You know, you kind of remind me of an older James Krause. I hope you don't mind me saying that, but
no,
that's, you know,
okay.
You look at James Krause, and he's an individual that,
yeah,
kind of walked the path that you did, you know, and he tries to instill in others that, hey, you know, there is a life after the sport. You know, you truly have to create a foundation. You truly have to take care of your family. Don't count on the cage to take care of you. And I think this is what you did, and you've instilled without you knowing in a lot of fighters that, you know, like James Krause, you know, who happens to be a millionaire now, but it took a long, hard road for him to get there. And I think a lot of fighters need to look at the, I guess the best way to say it is the model that you've created and designed in your life, and realize that they need to do something like that in theirs, because time and time again, I have fighters retire on my show with nowhere to go or no outlook in life. And it's disheartening because here, you know, it's the harsh reality. I'll be just quite honest. The harsh reality of the world is we're nothing but a number. I mean, whether you're in fighting or you're in business, you're gone today, your shoes are filled tomorrow. I mean,
yeah,
you know, people
absolutely
don't realize that. And, you know, I'll be 53 years old this June, and so I look at life as kind of a different aspect. You know, I lost my leg quite a few years ago, and you know, I looked at being, you know, half a man, and I totally looked at it all wrong. And
yeah,
with the help of Zach Cummings and a few other fighters, they instilled in me that, you know, I'm still Don McGuire. I'm still the man that I was. It's just in a different aspect. So I came back to shooting because I had taken a break, and I realized that my greatest passion, my greatest pride, my greatest perseverance came after my greatest obstacle. And the second half of my career as a handicapable individual allowed me to inspire and have some of the best aspects of my life, but I also realized that I didn't know who Don McGuire was until I had lost my leg. You know, Aaron, the life that you created is tremendous. You know, the aspect that you brought to the sport was second to none. Even though you consider yourself a B-league fighter, I don't look at you in that aspect. I mean, you fought some of the best in the world. You've done some of the greatest things in the sport that the sport will ever see. And now you're sitting on top of the world as a tremendous businessman. If you had a piece of advice that you could put in a statement to some of these younger fighters that are out there that really need to look at life, or just a bit of knowledge that you can give them, what would that statement be, my brother?
Man, I got to tell you, Don, it would be to take time, enjoy what you're doing, and make sure that the people that are surrounded by or that are surrounding you are positive individuals that have goals that you want to have. I keep a very close, tight-knit group of people around me that either have the same goals that I have now, or they have goals that I can foresee myself having in the next 5 to 10 years. Is to have a mentor that can get you to where you want to go. Early on, you know, I looked at Pete Wilhelm as my mentor, and I said, man, I want to be like this guy. I want to touch what this guy has. Very respectful, look you right in the eye, shake your hand, didn't talk a lot of smack or anything like that. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because I know today's culture in MMA, a big part of that is, hey, I'm going to call this guy out. I'm going to call this guy, a pussy on Twitter or whatever they're going to do, right? They're going to come out and try to build a name for themselves any way that they can, and that's fine. That's fine, because it's a part of the game, right? But when the lights are off and you're by yourself, make sure that you're surrounding yourself with the right people. And I would say that's the biggest contributing factor to my success, is to look around myself. And I tell you, I make cuts yearly, even weekly in some cases, and go, man, I don't know if this is the guy that I need to be around. You know, for a long time there, towards the end of my fight career, I had the opportunity to hang out with and train with Tim Kennedy for a few years. And you want to talk about a motivated individual that'll really stir up the spirit in somebody if you allow what he's doing and what he's saying to resonate in you and to actually take action in it. I learned a lot about myself and a lot about what I wanted to do hanging out with that guy just for a few years. And, you know, like it's my father-in-law being there as far as a businessman, Jimmy Smith at the time being there as the well-dressed executive guy that was in construction. My sponsors over the years that wanted to help me out, a couple of them owned roofing companies and would allow me to do contracting in between fights. So I made sure to pay attention and have some of those skill set, some of that skill set whenever I was finished with fighting, because I knew it wasn't going to last forever. I didn't know how long it was going to last. I didn't know, you know, how successful it was going to be. But I knew, you know, even though I was making money and getting by on myself, I was still fighting on international TV and still, you know, maybe had $1,000 in my bank account, which was fine because it was just me at the time, right? So ultimately, to answer your question, is just surround yourself by the right people, by other people that you want to be in the future. And make sure to evaluate your friends daily, man, because they can drag you down or they can bring you up, and it happens, man. Birds of a feather flock together, right? So,
yeah, You know, I got to agree with you on the Tim Kennedy and Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith is my homeboy in life. I love the guy, yeah, but except for when he busts my knuckles or smacks me in the ass. The guy,
yeah.
You know, it actually broke my heart when, you know, Jimmy left Bellator and went to the UFC. But I'm proud of him. But, you know, Bellator will never be the same. You know, I truly think that, you know, because Jimmy's been on my show. You know, we had him on here. We talked about Fight Quest and different aspects, you know, and he truly is a real brother in life. And you kind of remind me a lot of him. So that's a tremendous attribute to you.
Well,
you know,
I take that as a compliment, man, yeah.
Truly is. You know, well, I'm blessed to have you on my show. You know, Scott Zur, thank you so much because, you know, I'll tell you, Aaron, you know, there's not very many people that are humble and tell a true story like you do. And, you know, I take away from this interview that it was really your parents and your girlfriend and your child that truly defined the man you are today. And, you know, I think that's tremendous when you look at it in that aspect because, you know, a lot of people really don't enjoy life. They look into the future and they don't live into the moment. You know, I did a post yesterday. I don't worry about yesterday. I don't worry about tomorrow. I'm just living in the moment. And I truly think that that's how you led your life and created the dynasty that you have today. You know, you forever left a mark on the sport. Everybody will always remember who you are, brother. And, you know, especially after this interview, I would be more than honored to have you back on the show again to share more of the stories because I think your story, your book isn't complete. You're just writing a new chapter. And, you know, that's what life is about, truly finding yourself, creating yourself, and taking care of what you need to in life, and you truly have done that. You know, I truly am humbled. I mean, I honestly got this show over James Lynch, so, I mean, it's kind of
there
cool
you
that
go.
Aspect.
I'll
but,
take it.
You know, yeah, right. Because I created this show to give back to the sport, you know, about 14
yeah.
years ago. And I wanted to give back to people that put food on my table, a roof over my head. And that's truly what you've done in life. You don't treat anybody any different than you did before, than you do now. Now that you have a successful business and you're doing well, you remained who you are in life. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people can learn from you. Is no matter how broke you are or how rich you are, remain true and humble to who you are and what's created you. And I find
Absolutely.
That in you, and it's a tremendous honor to have you on my show. You know, I look at life as a very complex thing, but also I look at it as the easiest aspect to find yourself, and I think you truly did. You know, you talk about your mentors, you know, being Pete Wilhelm. You know, on this last question of the interview, you know, actually, I'm not even going to do a last question. I'm gonna let you do another statement because in life, we don't always get the opportunity to thank those that allowed us to get where we're at today. And I know you probably can't go through the whole list of everybody, but if you could make a statement to everybody, including your girlfriend, your child, or whoever you want it to be, giving thanks to who, you know, who created the man you are today, what would that statement be, my brother?
Man, I would say, you know, first and foremost, and, you know, and regardless of anybody's situation, you know, mom and dad, for me, would be the first big thank you for just being there through thick, through thin. Like I said, man, I put them through a lot of heartache and headaches over the years, and man, they were rock solid and did not budge without question. So from there, my beautiful, dedicated girlfriend at the time, and now she is my wife of 7 years. She was with me when I was flat busted, broke, sneaking into dollar movies, and life has certainly changed for us quite a bit, tremendously now, and she's still my rock star. We can still kind of lay in bed and watch a movie and just reflect on where we were 6, 7, 8 years ago. So, daughter, dude, I got to tell you, kiddos for me now, I'm you know, 250, 255 pounds now, tattoos, facial hair, kind of the short haircut, and I'm the guy walking around grocery store saying, can I see your baby? Can I hug your baby? Can I kiss that baby? So it certainly changed my life forever, having my own child. You know, my father-in-law, Randy Henderson, it's been an absolute rock star throughout the beginning, even when I was working for him and told him, said, hey, man, I'm starting up my own company. He goes, okay, well, I know that you're quitting. I know that you're starting another company. And now you're also asking me for advice and money to start your other company. Perfect. I'm in. So, you know, how many father-in-laws would do that for you? Pete Wilhelm for giving me the opportunity early on. You know, David Heath was one of my early mentors as a mixed martial artist. And really super humble guy and took me under his wing and taught me a lot of things early on. I know one time we were training and I kicked him in the balls 3 times in one session. So thank you for not killing me for that day. And, you know, just above and beyond that, man, I've just been surrounded by beautiful people and continue to do so. So, Don, I want to say thank you for having me on the show today, man. I really appreciate it and spending time with you, man. It's been great.
The honor's all been all mine. And you know what? Like I said, you truly don't get individuals who share their story in the manner that you did. And it's truly humbling because this sport has a way of taking people and ruining their attitudes, and it has a way of making them feel like they're larger than life. And you've never done that. You've always remained the person that you were when you were born. And that's truly humbling for me. You know, it was an honor for me to have you on the show today. I want to thank Scott Zur again. You know, it was a truly tremendous interview. I would love to have you back on in the future. Like I said, I don't think your story has truly been told. On that note, brother, if there's any friends or family or just anybody you would like to thank other than the ones mentioned or just anything else you'd like to add to the show, the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, again, thank you for having me on, Don. This has been great, the opportunity to come out and share the story that I've had, and hopefully it assists and inspires somebody to be better than what they were previously, and maybe they take a piece of this tidbit that I've given and incorporate it into their own life and continue to move on. So thank you so much, man. You've got my phone number. You've got my email address. You know how to get a hold of me, man. I'd love to be on the show again sometime in the future, sir.
Oh, most definitely. I truly appreciate it. Thank you for making my day a blessed day. You truly did. I mean, you left a mark in my heart, bro. I mean, because the story you told is so real, and you told it with such heart and passion. You know, you truly don't get that nowadays. And being the old man that I am, I truly appreciate it. On that note, thank you so much, Josh. Aaron, it was truly you got me stuck when you fought Josh Thompson or whatever, Matt Thompson.
Hey, there
whatever.
You go. Hey, well, if you're ever in San Antonio, I got a big bro hug for you, Don. I appreciate it, brother.
Hey, most definitely. You have a tremendous day. You tell your wife hi and give your daughter a hug. I truly appreciate
you
taking the time away for your family to do the show. Stay blessed, brother, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, Don. Have a great day, brother.
All right, God bless you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Aaron Lofton, you know, truly a tremendous individual in life. And, man, he kind of got me kind of teared up there. Usually I'm the one that's making people get teared up. I'm not the one that's usually getting teared up. But he told his story in such a profound aspect that it truly touched my heart. And I'm going to have him on the show again, whether he's still active or not. You know, his story is truly one that needs to be shared time and time again. On that note, I want to thank Juan Martinez with the Fighters Voice, and also my main sponsor, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez. I want to thank the 86ers.net. I want to thank Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran. I want to thank Bite Me Mouth Guards, the best mouth guards in the business, with Joe Rice. Check them out. Truly tremendous people. I just don't put anybody else's name on my show because it's just, man, how I roll. I roll with brothers, and they truly are family to me, each and every one of them. I want to thank my listeners, you know, for tuning in today. Today was a tremendous show. It touched my heart. I hope you all took away what I did. Have a blessed day. On that note, I'm going to leave with a little bit of music. You know what? Actually, we're going to go ahead and throw an 86ers commercial on so you know where to get some of the gear that I tremendously rock. On that note, have a good day, and God bless.
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. not. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Whip bomb, might get deported. Fish me alive, less than anointed. Wrote this at 111, recorded. Clock struck 12, bank on Warner. Might sound with Sony just for some stock, nigga. Still in the